We're doing the Chazana, the Chazanish Emunah Bitachon, we're on page Chaf Gimel. The Chazanish had defined for us that Emunah is the understanding that Hashem is potent, watching the world, and He can change things at any time. Bitachon is when we're faced with junctures where we would be challenged to overlook that, where our senses seem to say fight or flight, where everything seems to be up in the air and it's survival of the fittest. And if at those junctures we can connect to the emunah we have in our common day, that's bitachon. The Chazanish pointed out that no one promised you the outcome is going to be pleasant. People misrepresent emunah and bitachon, and they think that emunah and bitachon are the faith that the outcome is going to be what I want it to be. Chazanish says no one ever promised you it's going to be that way. But emunah and bitachon is connecting to that concept that Hashem is in control, even at times where I do have to put in my utmost and I don't feel like He's in control. It seems like a question of, will the chemo work? It doesn't seem like Hashem's involved. It seems like it's the statistics involved. Okay, it's at those junctures that bitachon has to kick in. That's the difference between emunah and bitachon. Chazanish had said that they're really two sides of the same coin. It's just a question of where you're applying it. And then the Chazanish went on to discuss that emunah and bitachon should be reflected in our life, in the way we behave, in our business practices. If I'm connected to Torah and to Hashem watching over the world, so then I don't have to cheat on my taxes in order to make an honest dollar. And very often people who preach emunah and bitachon, when they're suddenly faced with challenges or monetary challenges, so then suddenly it seems to wither. It was all nice talk. The Chazanish says we find people who speak emunah and bitachon when life seems to be shining upon them, when everything's going good, so then they have faith in Hashem, Hashem's running everything, it's great. But then what happens when life takes a turn? And as we discussed yesterday, life is a man paddling at the beach, and the waves keep hitting him over the head, and he keeps trying to get on the surfboard, and wave after wave knocks him down. And the question is, will he get on that surfboard, or will he give up? Because if he gets on the surfboard, then he'll catch certain waves. He'll still be pounded by other waves, but he will catch some of the waves of life. And we said that, so coming back here, the question is, when the waves are pounding down on him, then does he connect as emunah and bitachon? That's the great challenge. And the Chazanish had said that one of the ways that one can connect to the concepts of the Torah is through learning Torah. He says there are two forms of connection. One is the general connection and one is the specific connection. When we learn the details of a specific halacha, that develops within us not only a respect but also a fondness for that halacha. The more we delve into a specific halacha, the more we connect to that halacha. So that was what we were discussing, and how if you study the laws of the Torah, then you learn to respect them. The more you learn, the more you'll have respect, the more you'll connect. Yes? To some degree, yes. To some degree, then emunah bitachon is that this isn't happening by mistake, and then result is His will. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to like His will or understand His will. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted a lot of things. He wanted his children to be the next leaders of the people of Israel. He wanted certain things, and he didn't get them. He wanted to enter the land of Israel. He didn't get that. Moshe Rabbeinu makes certain requests in the Torah, and he does not get them. The personal requests. We see in his personal life, he did not get what he asked for in certain things. So
he almost could have. I mean, he said a few more prayers on entering Israel, he would have been in, right?
All right, maybe.
So does that mean anybody has a certain amount of prayers that they can say for anything?
No. We have no guarantee that you pray enough, you'll get what you asked for, no. And we're continuing on page Chaf Gimel. This was just a quick overview to bring us to where we're holding. We're in the third chapter, the ninth paragraph. He's quoting the grace. He says the following.
Okay,
גרמים הוא נרתע עליהם, ומגרמי הוא נרתע עליהם, וניצום תגבר עליו. And even though the average person who grows Orthodox, so then you show him non-kosher food, you show him meat and milk, a cheeseburger, so he doesn't have a Yetzer Hara for it. When a person grows up Orthodox, it's a given that he's not eating that. So it's not such a challenge for him. לעומת זה בדברים שבן אדם לחברו, but even the most Orthodox person and the person who's an FFB and from day one he's observant, but when it comes to mitzvot between man and his fellow man, בחלקות יעבור. It seems such smooth sailing to transgress. וליבו לא יפחד. Whereas if you offered him a piece of pork, he shudders. I do this sometimes. People want to tell me Lashon Hara, and I say, can we go eat pork? And they say, pork? Rabbi, what are you talking about? And I say, pork is one lav, and Lashon Hara is so many more lav. Let's go eat pork. I've never had pork. So people shudder, pork. Okay, good that they shudder, they're right. But we should shudder from the mitzvah ben adam lachavero of Lashon Hara. We also should shudder. So how come? So he writes, when it comes to certain mitzvot, we're scared. When it comes to other mitzvot, it seems so smooth to glide in transgression. ואף כשחברות טובו לדין, יחבול תחבולות להתחמק ולהישמד ממנו. And even if his friend tells him, let's go verify this halacha. Who says you're right? Who says you have a right to do this to me? So then a person tries to find all kinds of ways out. הלולות תגזול חלמו מלאו דטריפה. The prohibition to steal is more severe than the prohibition of eating a non-kosher animal. Shaf Yom Kippur ino mechaper. If a person ate non-kosher, then Yom Kippur can wipe away that sin. But if a person stole from his neighbor, Yom Kippur does not wipe away that sin. V'chol shal pi adin en hadavar shelo zehu bichlal gzeila. And anything we have that the halacha doesn't allow us to have, anything that halachically I don't have a right to, so then that's included in thievery.
What would that be? I mean, like things. Let's say there's certain things that a Jew can purchase that he's not allowed to have.
No. We're talking about money that's not supposed to be in your pocket, but in someone else's pocket. ובכל זאת לפי שהן הרגל מתמיד בשמירת הדין. But when it comes to adhering to the laws, to the justice system of the Torah, there we don't have a habit. When it comes to not eating non-kosher food, when it comes to maintaining a kosher diet, we have the habit. So you try to break my diet, I say, no, wait a second. I don't want that. But somehow we need to try and develop that habit that in monetary matters, I'm going in line with the law. So then, nafsho ne'ederet mikinyana miknet avat ha'mishpat u'pachdato. Somehow our souls are precluded from connecting, from loving justice. Do I really love the truth? Am I scared of transgressing the law when it comes to monetary matters? Or am I just scared? I was once present where a rabbi's wife said to him, you know, we have to pay our electric bill. I made a mistake. We were supposed to pay it yesterday. And you could see him visibly get upset. And the reason he was upset was because halachically, we're not supposed to pay interest. And he knew, even though it was a couple of pennies, that if the Jewish electric company here in Israel, if he's a day late in paying his bill, he's going to have to pay interest on that day late. And it bothered him. The pennies didn't bother him. The transgression of the mitzvah, I'm not supposed to pay interest. So there are leniencies. They do a heter iska. They find ways out so that legally, halachically, they can collect the interest. But he didn't want to rely on that. So when his wife told him they missed the deadline for paying the electric bill, he stopped their conversation and went to pay it right away so that they wouldn't forget another day, because it visibly bothered him. How could it be that I'm paying interest? I'm not supposed to pay interest to a fellow Jew. So that's a habit that we have a hard time developing. That perspective of let my money be kosher. We're accustomed to our food being kosher, but what about our money, our monetary dealings? V'dvarav zal, de'af bnei adam asher gmul ma'aseihem hatovim mechuyavim lechabadam b'shem yireim, nichshalim hem b'shtamtut min hadin shebeino levein re'o. When he writes over there, he says, you have people, everyone knows their good name about how kind they are, how good they are, And yet they stumble when it comes to ensuring that between them and their fellow man, they are adhering to halacha. V'ha'ikar, שברפאות תחלואי הנפש האלו הוא העיון בהלכה הדק היטב בכל פרטי סעיפיה. And if you want to cure this, so then the key is to learn the halakha, to learn the laws, to learn and attain clarity with all the details, עד שישרשו בקרבו אהבת הדין במוחלט. And that's a way a person can instill within himself that love for justice, for truth. So till here, the Chazon Ish was quoting the letter of the Gris, and he says, you see from his words, if a person just tries to work in a general way, to be a God-fearing person, you're still missing it. If you don't work hard at understanding the details of the laws, so then you're not going to get that level of connection. ואף בלומדו במרוצה ושטחיות, לא קנה עדנה את קניין המבוקש לאהבת הדין ולהיות מסור אליו. You want to be dedicated to the mitzvos of Torah, you have to work hard at understanding them. The more you work at understanding them, the more you connect to them. It's interesting, I once taught a group of post-high school students who were very feministic. And they, what? They, yeah. They didn't put on, no, not feminine, but they were feminists. They were pro-women's rights. So, I had the pleasure of learning with them Tractate Ksubos. So Tractate Ksubos discusses that legal document that a husband and wife have that draws out their responsibilities within marriage. So they were like sharpening their knives and saying, oh yeah, now we're going to show them how the Torah is not fair to women. And the more we learned, the more respect they had, the more they understood how the Torah is there to protect fair treatment of the wife and the husband within a marriage. And they saw how many institutions the rabbis made to protect women. They walked away with tremendous respect for the ksuba and the legal system of marriage and divorce. Because so long as you don't know the details, so long as you have an abstract view, so then you buy into all kinds of articles you might read online. The second you look at the ksuba, you see the details, you see how many laws are there to protect a woman and how a woman really has it really good within a Jewish marriage, then you suddenly say, oh, wait a second, it's a different deal. Yes, so you have one question. So let's take a step back. If he wants to give her a get and she says, I don't want to receive it, she could also say no. Goes both ways. And if she has grounds for a divorce, the Mishnah says, let's say he took on a job as a smith that worked with copper. So they would come home and they'd have a foul smell. Because he would work in a mine, and when they got married, he didn't work in a mine. She could come to court and say, I demand a divorce. And the courts will force him to give a divorce. You have many situations where the courts will force him. So sometimes they put him in a little room, and they fed him little food, and they said to him, look, we're not allowed to kill you, but you're being not nice to your wife, and you're supposed to divorce her. So we're going to give you water and barley. And as you eat water and barley, this diet will ultimately cause you to go so ill, you'll die. But we won't kill you. We'll feed you. We're not allowed to kill you, but we're allowed to feed you any diet we want. So they put him in a little room, and they'd start feeding him water and barley. And they knew that as they ate the water and barley, the barley would expand in his stomach. And he knew that he can either divorce her or die. It's up to him.
That's not killing somebody by, you know, feeding them potentially what's poisonous, just to
it's his say. Choice.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a, I guess you're, I don't know. I won't argue that, but
so I'm just saying the halacha has systems. You're saying it's in his hands. It's in his hands to a degree.
If more often than not, you know, there are a lot of cases where women can go for 10, 15, 20 years without getting
the the thing is, a lot of
the in halacha, you have many situations which are relegated to a king. Now, the Torah is a system that says people can take advantage, and that's why you need a king. And the courts, to some degree, if we have the power, can do the job of a king. The courts can execute people. You have the story of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, who was a judge after the destruction of the temple, over a century after the destruction of the temple. And he executed people. If people were robbers, he would execute them. The Romans gave him legal authority. They saw he was a super genius. This is that Rabbi Elazar. We're coming up to Lag BaOmer, right? So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's son, who came out of the cave with him, ultimately was not only the chief rabbi of Israel, he was also appointed a judge by the Romans. And even though it was a long time after the destruction of the temple and the courts technically, legally could not administer the death penalty, he did. The courts have that capacity if the government would let them. So then there's what's called the gray area of the law, where the courts have to step up to the plate and take care of him. Over here in Israel, they're not going to let them do that. You know, in the United States, everyone made this big deal when they caught Rabbi Wolmark with a gang of people who would bring electric prods to get a get for a woman. It seemed hypocrisy to me, because what they were doing was protecting women. So now you're coming and saying, but he brought henchmen and threatened a guy to give his wife a divorce. When did he bring henchmen to get a divorce? To protect a woman who was being taken advantage of by her husband. So here you have a person who stands up and tries to protect these women, and the law comes out against him, and the newspapers come out against him. The New York Times, if you're so interested in women's rights, so look at the idea behind what the man was doing. Okay, so technically, it's women are protected. The courts are there to protect them, and the system is there to protect them. Back to the Chazon Ish.
Okay, can I just say something about what you were just saying? There's a court case right now where a rabbi and his henchmen were found guilty of just what you were talking about. And these cases of get refusals are extremely complicated, and people are reading the newspapers, and they're just siding with the women right away. First off, there's a lot of things that have to be agreed upon between both parties, such as visitation rights, children, and all these kind of things. And these women the majority of cases, the women are playing games with the media and the men, and they're really, you know, they're refusing gets and telling everybody another story, and it's really nasty. And I really am very sickened by these, thug rabbis with their cattle prods.
Okay. והעיקר שברפאות ושברפאות תחלואי הנפש האלו הוא העיון בהלכה הדק היטב. Okay, that we just did. הנה מבואם דרב זן. We did that. I lost my focus. Just a second. הנה מבואר בדברב זן. כי בהשתדלות כללית בקנייני העירה לא מצא עדיין את העיקר. והעיקר חסר בנפשו אם לא למד ולא עמל בעיון ההלכה בחושן משפט. We did that too. והלימוד בעיון בהלכה עד לרדת להלכה ברורה בכל הסעיפים המסתעפים הוא לימוד של שנים רבות בשקידה נמרצת. So if you really want to understand halacha, you have to apply yourself for many years with diligence. כי הסתגלות העיון הזהו הוא תכלית ידיעת התורה. Because if you want to understand what learning in depth is, that's the essence of knowing Torah. שהפליגו חזל שאפשר לקנותה בדרך הרי במיות השתדלות. You want to master Torah? You're not going to do it by the way. It cannot be a side job, you know, an hour a day. You have to work hard. And our sages said it takes 48 types of acquisition to acquire Torah. Those 48 tools to acquire Torah are tools that a person applies to himself to grow beyond his nature, to grow beyond his habits, to become a whole person. עד שלא תפריעו טבעו את רוב מסירותו ועצם שקידתו, so that his nature doesn't get in the way of his dedication. לא ייתן שינה לעיניו ותנומה לאף אפיו. Where a person can overcome being tired, a person can overcome his desire for rest, and a person can dedicate himself to Torah. So that's obviously a very high level the Chazon Ish is describing. But what the Chazon Ish has developed for us is an appreciation, even though it's not in our range right now, but it is an appreciation for how one grows and where one should aspire to grow to. And sometimes this helps us gain perspective, if not for ourselves, then at least for our children, where a person can grow with diligence and dedication and working hard to connecting to the mitzvot. And I think that in our own realm, we can develop. A person, we'll take a simple example. We all bench, right? We're all davening. If we take the time to study the prayer, the laws of prayer, the format of prayer, the words of prayer, so then we have a different appreciation for the prayer we're saying. You could spend a week on one sentence in prayer and learn it in depth. And the more you appreciate what's going on there, so then the more you can connect to it. The laws of benching, Birkat Hamazon, the laws of tzitzit, the laws of tefillin. As you study the details, so that helps us gain an appreciation for what we're doing with each mitzvah.